This is VSiN Prime Time, live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number four of VSiN Prime Time, alongside virtually Will Hill. I'm Tim Murray. Ginger power tonight here on VSiN Primetime. Headed to the bottom of the 10th inning in our VSiN Primetime game of the night. The Cincinnati Reds able to get out of a bases-loaded jam against the Yankees. And now, with a ghost runner on second base, Will Hill, the Reds are now a minus 412 favorite at DraftKings. So big move there as they're able to get out of that massive jam and see what the Yankees are able to do to avoid this issue they've got brewing here.
Yeah, it's amazing just watching these games every night, how often the team struggles to get the ghost runner in. So often you see it, team top of the 10th, man on second, nobody out. They just leave them there, bottom of the 10th. The answer, I know these guys throw hard, the ball moves, but just the get them over, get them in, the small ball aspect of baseball is something that's really died here, you know, the last 5 or 10 years with all the emphasis on velocity and power on both sides.
Wild one going on in St. Louis. The Cardinals up 8-7, that one in the top of the 8th inning. How about a scoreless game in Houston between the Phillies and the Astros, top of the 8th inning there, so a pitcher's duel. And maybe we'll get one in Anaheim tonight as we head to the bottom of the 2nd inning between the Red Sox and the Angels. Garrett Crochet, the leader in strikeouts on the hill, already 2 strikeouts in the first inning of work there for the Boston Red Sox. And a man who knows a thing or two about Boston sports, that would be my friend Brian Barrett, who joins us right now, courtesy of our Progressive guest line. And you could catch his podcast, part of the Ringer Podcast Network. It is called Off the Pike, talking all things Boston sports. And Brian, that's why I wanted to have you on tonight, because it's been a busy day, a busy couple of days here for Brad Stevens with everything that unfolded with the Jason Tatum injury. So let's start with the most recent trade, which is Kristaps Porzingis in a 3-team trade. He heads now to Atlanta, and all the reporting is, and Bobby Marks has said it, that this now puts the Boston Celtics in a pretty advantageous spot, a projected $180 million in tax savings with these two trades these past two nights.
Yeah, I think it's what the Celtics needed to do. I mean, Celtics fans didn't want to see this, and it's crazy to think that in this NBA now with the second apron stuff that you can be in a situation where just a year ago, the Celtics were having their parade for winning the championship, and 2 of their 5 starters are now gone. And obviously, Holiday meant a ton to that team. I thought he was the 3rd best player in the playoffs 2 seasons ago. Is not the same guy this year. And Kristaps Porzingis, unfortunately, had this weird illness where he was just completely ineffective in the postseason. I think there was an opportunity lost with some of the way that Missoula handled that series. But based on where this team is right now, and based on where Jason Tatum is in terms of the Achilles tear, this is what needed to happen for the Celtics in this new NBA. If they're going to rebuild again and build the next great Celtics team around Jason Tatum, you could not have Drew Holiday under contract for 3 more years after this. I mean, Drew Holiday this season, after shooting north of 42% from 3, was under the average 3-point percentage of 36%. He was around 35% from 3. So I thought it was really good that they didn't have to give anything up at the beginning of this whole thing. I thought maybe they'd have to attach something to Drew Holiday. But the fact that they get back Anfernee Simons, who, by the way, you have a lot of flexibility there. If you like the player, great. And he's a guy that can fill it up. I'm sure Missoula is going to like the fact that he takes a lot of threes. But when you look at him, he's a guy that, oh, he's on an expiring contract. So if it doesn't work out, you can just get off him after this year. And the same thing with the Porzingis deal with Niang. And if you look at the difference in contracts, Niang's making around $8.5 million, local kid here, by the way. And if you look at Porzingis, he's over 30 mil. So basically, and I would say, I guess the time would be around less than 24 hours, right? I mean, the Drew trade happened around close to midnight last night, somewhere around that time period. They've shed basically $27 million in salary. I thought this was going to be a difficult thing for the Celtics to be able to get under where they needed to get to. The most interesting thing now is going to be heading into the NBA draft on Wednesday night. They've already done the two big things that they need to do in terms of shedding salary. What can Brad Stevens and his front office do on Wednesday? Like, I would not be surprised at this point. You have the Hauser contract. Sorry as I digress here. But do you try to get into the lottery? Like, do you try to – Atlanta right now is all in, right? I mean, and I don't blame them. They look at an East that is dealing with Halliburton out, Tatum out. Who's the best team? The Knicks, the Magic? I mean, the Pistons certainly could make an argument there. But is there a way that the Celtics could get to 13 if Atlanta, they already did business with Atlanta, if they're like, hey, we have Porzingis, might as well add a shooter in Hauser? Like, is that an avenue the Celtics could move up and actually get premier, like get somebody in the lottery? Because based on where they've been in recent years, it's tough to get young, good players here.
If you're a Boston fan that buys a lot of jerseys between Devers, Holiday, Porzingis, man, if you went away for a week or two, you come back and all your jerseys are outdated with all these trades recently. That being said, what is the goal for the Celtics? Can you, I phrased it this way, anyone in the East can squint and talk themselves on an optimistic day into saying, you know what, why can't we be a three seed and be in a conference final second round? We're 2-2, something like that. Is there a path for Boston to be reasonably competitive and win a round maybe two next year? What do you think the goal is for Boston here in 2025-26 in a really wide open East?
Yeah, and I would add to your point too, they just saw Brad Marchand win a cup with a different team. So during all these, after the Devers trade, between these two moves, you have Brad Marchand winning with the Florida Panthers, and the Florida Panthers fans cheering chant, thank you, Boston, for Brad Marchand, which it was great to see all that. But plus 550 to come out of the Eastern Conference. The reason I think, like, it's, and I'm not trying to be optimistic Boston fan, the reason I think it's worth putting a little bit down on that is just because we heard, and I don't know how much to buy into all this stuff, guys, but it's like, hey, he had the surgery basically 12 hours before or after the injury, and that could help speed up the process. It's this speed bridge, this new Achilles-type surgery. And you also look at the fact that Kobe Bryant is his idol. His dad has said that he wants to be back in 8 or 9 months. The only issue I have, because I think the Celtics can certainly be a competitive team in the Eastern Conference. Like, they're going to have to play differently. They were 29th in pace last season. They were 29th in fast break points. That's certainly going to have to change. They played so much isolation, third in the league last year because of Jason Tatum. So can Mazzulla be pliable, which he has shown no ability to be whatsoever? He's going to have to change up his offense, but you still got Jaylen Brown. You still got Derek White. We'll see if they keep Simons, and Pritchard's a guy that can give you between 15 and 20 a game, I believe, coming off the bench, or maybe he comes into the starting lineup with Drew gone entering the season. We'll see what they do with Cornette. I think that's an important piece. But the question I have with Tatum, let's say hypothetically, like, they think he's ready to go towards the end of the season. It's not like, I remember when Paul George was coming back from, Paul George, the Thunder, and the Pacers just played. I mean, that was great for him. But when he broke his leg years ago and they brought him back for the tail end of the season, that was not a playoff team. So if you bring back Jason Tatum, it's going to be at the very end of the season. He's still going to be, he's in his prime, and it's tough to lose a prime year. But do you want to bring a player back knowing that's when you're going to ramp it up and get ready for the postseason again? That's a lot of pressure to put on him just in terms of coming back from that catastrophic injury, if you will. Do you want to do that to Tatum?
Once again, Brian Barrett joining us here on VSiN Primetime. It's Brian Barrett is where you can follow him on social media. Off the Pike is his podcast covering all things Boston sports. You know, I know you got to get back to watching the Red Sox, two innings in the books, Red Sox and Angels here tonight. But I am curious your thoughts of where this Red Sox team is headed. You know, Rafael Devers is traded very surprisingly, you know, a week or so ago. They go to San Francisco. They've now dropped three in a row. But big picture, 40-40. Do you look at this Boston team as a playoff team moving forward?
I think they have the capability to be one. The question I have is, they saved their season basically over a 2-week period where they took a series from the Yankees, they took a series from the Rays, and then they were able to sweep the Yankees. And they did a lot of that on their starting pitching. Now, I think that obviously Crochet, who's on the mound right now, is one of the best pitchers in the sport. They found something with Brian Bale where he started throwing a cutter for the first time in his career. Giolito's throwing the ball a little bit better. You can't really trust that. Buehler looks like he's absolutely done. He's second to last in pitching war in Major League Baseball. You don't know what you're going to get with Tanner Houck, who's coming back from an injury. Cutter Crawford had a setback. So I come back to this. Like, they're going to need the guy that they picked up in the Rafael Devers trade, Kyle Harrison, to give them something. Now, he's not even pitching for the big league club right now. His velocity up on the fastball is up 3 miles per hour this year. But the question with him is, they want him to develop a cutter. They want to work on some of his breaking stuff. I think their bullpen is elite when you're talking about Whitlock and Chapman on the back end, but it's going to be about the starting pitching. And guys, the defense, like, for another year in a row, the Red Sox are one of the worst defensive teams in Major League Baseball. You look at it, any metric, you just look at the basic errors. They've made more errors than anybody in baseball, and they've made more errors than anybody in baseball at left field, right field, second base, first base. So this fundamental stuff that they tend to be terrible at, I don't see that changing anytime soon. I do think the lineup will perform better, but the biggest thing to me is, can you get one more arm? And are you going to be alive enough in the hunt for them to buy at the trading deadline? Breslow said he thinks they could be better. If that's the case, I would hope they're buying, because it's been way too long of a bridge to be in this market where they're just plotting along. And they've been to the playoffs once since they won the World Series. It's an embarrassment.
You can follow him at It's Brian Barrett, his podcast covering all things Boston sports off the pike. Plenty to talk about right now up there in Boston with two massive trades for the Boston Celtics on the eve of the NBA draft. Brian, always appreciate it, man.
All right, have a good night, fellas, and never upset when the Yankees are losing.
Well, thanks, Brian. We didn't need that.
They were able to get out of a pretty big jam. You could have got the Yankees at, I think, plus 270, somewhere in that ballpark.
Ooh, another missed opportunity. What else is new for us?
And now they're in the 11th inning, 3-3, ghost runner on second there for the Yankees. Hey, folks, if you're looking for a more exciting way to bet, it's called X-Cutta. How about I spell it for you? X-C-U-T-T-A. And it's the future of futures wagering. It combines the adrenaline of a live auction, with the strategy of sports betting or fantasy picks. It's easy to use, and it works for any sport. Over 1,000 teams, players, golfers, and drivers, X-Cutta is adaptable to any sport, even horse racing, and it's free to sign up. Send an email to support@xcutta.com. Mention VSIN, and they'll give you a 3-month player promo code. X-Cutta, X-C-U-T-T-A.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, Will Hill, it's been a busy night. Got the latest on what's going on there in Boston. We got the updates on those odds as we talked to Jeff Sherman earlier today on the show, as the Boston Celtics moved out to 25-1 at the Westgate Superbook to win the championship next year, plus 650 to win the East, as they make a move today to ship Kristaps Porzingis down to Atlanta as part of a 3-team trade. Before we continue the NBA chatter, we've got the mock draft that just dropped courtesy of Jonathan Givony from ESPN, freshly updated with, as he notes, 22 changes throughout. Let's get people updated on our VSiN primetime game of the night. The Cincinnati Reds were a minus 412 favorite going into the bottom of the 10th inning, tied at 3. They did not score. The Yankees have scored one run, and now we head to the bottom of the 11th, ghost runner on second, and the Reds are a plus 113 underdog. Too short, or would you look at the Reds here?
No play for me. This isn't one where I'm going to look back either way and say, oh, I should have grabbed this or should have grabbed that. We missed an opportunity with the Dodgers at plus money. I blame you. And then we missed an opportunity. Really, Yankees at plus 270. All they had to do was get out of the inning. Then you know what? You could have bought back on the Reds. Sometimes, and we were talking this a little bit between the break, they don't properly price, in my opinion, teams' ability to get out of the situation with a ghost runner. So let's just say they're the road team. Top of the 10th, they don't score. They make them like a plus 270, 3-1, sometimes more underdog, where all you got to do is get a pop-up to start the inning where the runner doesn't advance. And you know what? You're two outs away from getting out of it, and you're back on your feet. These pitchers, when they really dial in and they need a strikeout or they need a pop or whatever, they're very good about, you know, choking off that run. It's not as easy as just hit a couple of fly balls and get out of here. It sounds easy, but these guys throw very hard with a lot of movement. So something to keep an eye on going forward. But I don't know. Is this anything you're itching to bet here? You Reds, Yankees either way?
No. I mean, De La Cruz leading off the inning always interests you, especially the game that he had yesterday with a homer and a triple. But I do want to give you an update from Colorado to pour more salt into the wound of our awfully terrible missed bet. Shohei Ohtani just hit a 2-run homer. So,
of course he did.
27 homers now for Shohei Ohtani. And once upon a time, the Colorado Rockies led the Los Angeles Dodgers, and you could have got the Dodgers at plus money in the second inning. And it's now 8-3. And if you want to bet the Rockies, just 22-1 on the on the money line. There are the
team total cash too for the Dodgers. 7.5 is about, we're saying it's about as high as you'll see in a baseball game. I don't think I've ever seen the 8.5. 7.5 for a team total is up there. Well, it's the sixth inning. I don't think there's any outs. There's a man on base, and they already went over. So, you know, sometimes you can get scared off by these numbers. You can get scared off of a winner because, I mean, imagine the opposite. Sometimes just imagine the opposite. Imagine betting, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to bet the Dodgers team total under against the Rockies in course. That'll be fun. That'll go well. So maybe that's one you keep an eye on going forward.
The Houston Astros did take the lead in the bottom of the eighth inning here, Will, as we got a solo home run for Cooper Hummel. And I believe that was his first homer of the season. So the Astros lead 1-0.
Robbie's brother.
Is it? I would love it if it was.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say probably not, but I'd be cool if it was. Ellie De La Cruz doing Ellie De La Cruz things. He beats out a grounder to the right side of the infield. So now men on the corners for the Cincinnati Reds. Bottom of the 11th inning, no outs in the 11th inning there. Update from Los Angeles. The Red Sox, who have dropped, I believe, what is it, 3 in a row? They lost last night. Garrett Crochet on the hill. 3 strikeouts so far through 2 innings, Will, and we did get a run in that third inning. So the Red Sox are on the board. We got a sacrifice fly from Nate Eaton in the third. 1-0, Red Sox have the lead over the Angels. Any other things worth noting as the Washington Nationals apparently just never play on the road. Let's just always be on the, or excuse me, never play at home. Just always be on the road. They lead 2-0 in the top of the third inning.
No, but the Reds looks like tied it up, and tied it up here. So the sports book, the app, is always ahead of the action. So it looks like 4-4 with first and second, and still nobody out here. As the Reds get a base hit, looks like from Steer. All right, we can do it again. We got another chance here. Yankees plus 273. Is that enough to pull the trigger here? Do you think they get out of this?
I don't think so.
I'll put a little something on it. Because I was just blabbering about how these are underpriced sometimes. You get good numbers. I'll throw a little money on it. Yankees plus 284, DraftKings, what the hell?
So do you have, can you pull up the draft odds? I want to run through the.
I don't have them in Connecticut. I got to go offshore or whatever. So I don't have them on DraftKings.
All right. So I wanted to run through this. Once again, Jonathan Givony and Jeremy Wu have just put out their most recent mock draft over at ESPN.com. And talking to Luke Swain, he is of the strong belief that Givony is probably the best out there when it comes to inside scoops and all of that. So this was updated an hour ago. And as pointed out, 22 changes throughout. With number one, Cooper Flagg, shocker. Number two, Dylan Harper, no surprise there. Number three, VJ Edgecombe. So no change there. Still riding with Baylor's VJ Edgecombe to be the number three overall pick. I will try to update you on the odds as I take a look. Edgecombe at minus 275. By the way, Will, as I read through this, if there's someone that you want to jump, you want me to explain what is said, I can jump in. While sources say Edgecombe appeared nervous during his private workout in Philadelphia and did not shoot the ball particularly well in an unnatural one-on-one setting, he made a strong impression in interviews and meetings, something the front office values more highly. So that is worth noting there, VJ Edgecombe. At number four.
Same thing people said about you in your draft combine interview, by the way. So that's something you guys have in common.
Still not over it, man. I thought I had been promised by the Memphis Grizzlies to be the 58th overall pick, and it never happened. I was just very, very it still doesn't sit well.
Don't blame you.
Number four, Con Knipple, Duke to the Charlotte Hornets.
Okay.
Number five, Jeremiah Fears, point guard Oklahoma to Utah. If you want to take a look at the top five market real quickly, the Jeremiah Fears market sits at plus 225. It is a one-way market. But him to go in the top five sits at plus 225, a little bit of move there. What's interesting to note, how about this? Jeremiah fears to be a top five pick, plus 225, to be the number five pick, plus 190.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's just that is interesting. I don't that doesn't make much sense to me. All right, you want to keep going? Because yeah. I've got you keep going. I know, you know, I'll get to it. Trey Johnson is one that's
okay
interesting to me because I've not heard his name yet, so that's the name I'm looking for.
Number six, Wizards Ace yeah. Bailey.
Ooh.
Number seven,
by the jersey,
New Orleans Kamen Malawak, the center out of Duke. Rival teams continue to wonder whether the Pelicans might look to maneuver up the board for Bailey, but if both he and Fears are off the board, Malawak appears firmly in consideration here. Also seen as an option for the Nets at number eight, Malawak is considered by some teams as the most likely among the second-tier players in the number 3 to 8 range to experience a slight drop if a surprising prospect disrupts this part of the draft. Number eight, Trey Johnson, Texas.
Wow.
This is, I would say, maybe the biggest surprise of this far. Johnson has been viewed by many teams, as according to Jonathan Givony and Jeremy Wu, as having a somewhat narrow band of landing spots between picks number 4 and 6. But there are realistic scenarios like this one where he slips out of that group. Here, Fears moves into the top 5. Bailey makes it to what appears to be a potential landing spot in Washington. And Johnson slides to number 8.
What are the numbers for Johnson to go 8th?
Johnson to be the 8th pick is plus 475.
That's enough for me. I mean, that would be enough to trigger a bet. I have a hard time. Look, he's got better sources than me, so I'm going to sit here and tell Givony, you know, where he's wrong. That surprises me. I'll just leave it at that. But you're getting almost 5-1 on something where Givony feels pretty good about it, and he's going to put it in his, I would imagine this is his last mock. I don't know. For me, is that enough for you to pull the trigger, assuming you can get your hands on that number? For me, it is.
Yeah, we'll talk about it to sum up the show because we got Rob Doster on the other side. Number 9, Noah Essengai, who has been one that's been talked about quite a bit so far today. We'll discuss this a little bit later on. Hear from Rob Doster from the Field of 68 on the other side of the break. Hey, folks, this summer, go all in at Circa Las Vegas with the ultimate getaway package for just $400. That's a 2-night stay at Circa, $100 dining credit, $100 beverage credit, all for just $400. Limited time offer through September 4th. Head on over to CircaLasVegas.com.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is VSiN Prime Time here on this Tuesday evening. Will Hill, Tim Murray, Ginger Power with you here on this evening. I'm at the Circa Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas. Will over there in the lovely state of Connecticut. And from that lovely state, no longer living there, is our good friend from the Field of 68, Rob Doster, joins us here on the eve of the NBA draft. And, you know, Rob, from a betting standpoint, there's really no interest in Cooper Flagg or even Dylan Harper. But I want to just ask you about those two particular players and your expectations for them heading into the NBA. As they're both beheaded to Texas, Cooper Flagg's going to be a Dallas Maverick. Dylan Harper is going to be a San Antonio Spur. What do you expect from those two fellas in year one in the NBA?
Well, first and foremost, I think Cooper Flagg within 5 years is going to be a top 10 player in the NBA. I think that highly of him. We know what he is defensively. We know what he is as a ball mover. He was one of the best prospects in America because of everything that he could do that didn't involve scoring, right? And then he goes out as the youngest player in Division I college basketball and averages, 19 points a game, the 9 rebounds, couple of assists, a steal here, a block here. Shot 47% from three, and he did it all while playing as a national player of the year on a team that was the best college basketball team that we've seen since Kentucky in 2015. And I will die on that hill. So I think he's going to be an absolute superstar. People forget how young he was. He is a year younger than what most other college basketball players were when he played against them, in an era where college basketball was as old as it's been in a long, long, long time. He's going to be an absolute monster. I mean, Dylan Harper, I think Dylan Harper is closer to being on Cooper Flagg's level than it is to being a conversation about who should be the number two pick in this draft. I just don't know how it works with San Antonio, right? Like, if you got a guy like Wemby, the whole value of Wemby is you got a 7'4" dude that's the best rim protector in the NBA, and he can make threes. The whole value is being able to, like, the floor spacing you can create with that, right? And we're going to put him out there with Dylan Harper, who's like a ball stopper that's not really a catch-and-shoot guy, and De'Aaron Fox, who's a needs the ball in his hands, not really a catch-and-shoot guy, and Steph Castle, who you don't have to guard outside of, like, 6 feet. I don't know how that's all going to work. So San Antonio is going to have a lot of pieces, and they're going to have to make a move somewhere, somehow. And I got a feeling that's going to be one of the highlights and one of the fireworks of draft night. Something's going to happen with San Antonio. I don't know. Can we bet on that, Tim? Something crazy is going to happen with San Antonio. What? How can I get some on that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, my my prediction and my plea to Sam Presti yesterday on the show, because I think Sam Presti needs all the advice he could get. He's not very good at his job. But I said, I wouldn't be surprised with all these this treasure trove of selections. Why not go up and get a Trey Johnson or a Con Knipple? Watching those games, as amazing as they were defensively, having a lights out shooter would really be advantageous. So, Rob, I'll ping pong it back to you. When you look at Con Knipple and or Trey Johnson, who do you think flourishes, excuse me, sooner? Who has the game to be just that lockdown elite shooter?
I think it's Con Knipple, because he's more of a complimentary piece, right? Like, Trey Johnson to me is a little boomer bust, because he's someone that kind of has to have the ball in his hands, right? And I think that there's two different kinds of scores in the NBA right now. Every team's going to have, like, their go-to guy, which is a guy that you kind of ISO for and let him go get a bucket. And that's the role, that's the archetype that Trey Johnson is. And I just don't know if he's quite good enough to be one of, like, the 20 best scorers in the entire world, which is what he'd have to be to play that role in the NBA, right? Whereas Con Knipple's this guy that he's going to make the right play, he's going to move the ball, he's going to be the catch-and-shoot guy, he's going to be the straight-line driver, he's going to be the guy that makes the right reads. And I think that kind of piece has more value as a role player in the NBA than the kind of piece that Trey Johnson will. Trey Johnson certainly has a higher ceiling than Con Knipple. I don't think Con Knipple will be an all-star. I think Trey Johnson has all-star in his range of outcomes. If you're just kind of projecting what he could end up being, the question is just how good do you think he's going to be as the go-to scorer? And I'm not sure it's set in stone that he could be an all-star caliber scorer, if that makes sense.
Rob, what are you thinking here with the Sixers at three? The betting market seems to think it's Edgecombe, but we know the one and we know the two. Based on, you know, reading the tea leaves, it doesn't sound like Philly has reached out and said, hey, you're going to be our guy here at three. It seemed like open to business, seem open to, you know, picking somebody else. Do you have any sense of who they will pick and who do you think they should pick?
Well, I'll tell you this right now. As a guy that's living about 20 minutes outside the city of Philadelphia, that's raising a 9-year-old boy that is a diehard Eagles, Phillies, and Sixers fan. Anybody other than Ace Bailey is what they want around here. That's what they're praying for. I don't care who it is. Give me someone other than Ace Bailey. If it was me making that pick, I would probably be trying to trade it. I don't know if you're going to be able to get any value for it, because I think that anybody trading up for third will just say, well, why are we giving up more value when the whoever will get at 6 or 7 will basically be the same kind of play. Like, if you get Ace Bailey, you get Trey Johnson, you get Vijay Edgecombe, you get Continental, you get Jeremiah Fears, you get any of the guys who's kind of in that range, you're getting the same caliber of player from 3 to 7. So I don't know why you would trade up for it. So they got to make that pick. If it's me, I'm taking Continental in that spot. I think Vijay Edgecombe probably has the highest ceiling, though, because of what he can be defensively, because of how athletic he is, and because of the fact that jump shot actually looks like it's projectable in the long term. And overall, he seems like a kid that's going to be a good worker, a hard worker, and someone that will fit in alongside Jared McCain and Tyrese Maxey, and kind of what the future of that organization is. So I'd be trying to trade it, but I think it's going to end up being Vijay Edgecombe. That sounds about right. That's where the tea leaves are going, right?
It's possible. The other pick here is that's interesting to me, at least, is the 10, just because you can bet on who's going to be a top 10 pick. You can be on who's going to be you can bet on who's exactly going to be the 10th pick. Wolf has been getting some buzz here to go to the Suns. Now that the Suns have it with the Durant trade, it seems like Tim's point, the Thunder are open to trading up to either 9 or 10. Any idea what the Suns are thinking here with the 10th pick?
I don't think anybody knows, because as of what, like 72 hours ago, the Suns did not have the number 10 pick.
Right.
So one of those things. And I think that the one thing that we've learned about the Suns organization with the new ownership is that if you are trying to project a rational decision maker in this spot, there's no possible way you could do that with the way the Suns are going right now. So it could be anybody at the number 10 pick. I'll tell you what my favorite bet on the board, though, is Jeremiah Fears be a top five pick. I think you can get that, what, 2.5 to 1 right now. I think he ends up being the 5th pick to the Jazz. The Jazz are in a spot where they need guard play. They probably need a point guard. They got Lauri Markkanen, and they got Walker Kessler. They got some size inside, right? But they need someone that can set the table for those guys. And Jeremiah Fears, to me, he might be the biggest boom or bust prospect in this draft. But if he hits, man, you're looking at a guy that could end up being an all-star at the point guard spot. And I think that's who they end up taking. And it seems like that's where a lot of the projections are. And if you get that at 2.5 to 1, that seems like pretty good odds to get Jeremiah Fears as a top five pick.
Yep, sitting at plus 250. Under 6.5 is minus 105. That has definitely been a draft position that's been on the move. Rob Doster, Field of 68, joining us here, courtesy of our progressive guest line, Field of 68. They will have draft coverage tomorrow night. We will have draft coverage here on VSiN. We'll certainly be looking at it from a betting standpoint. You had mentioned the Ace Bailey saga, and this is just bizarre how this is all unfolded here. Right now, he's favored to go number 6 to Washington at plus 150. Some of the things that you read, Rob, is that teams are just going to forget about the, you know, unwillingness to go and work out and just draft them based off of talent alone. How big of a red flag in your eyes is this Ace Bailey situation?
I think the red flag is that he seems to be taking advice from people that should not be in a position to give a kid with his kind of future earning potential the kind of advice that they are giving him, right? Like, the way that I would frame it is, everything I've heard about the kid, look, I live in New Jersey, man. I know people that work at Rutgers and work in the Rutgers athletic department really, really well. And I haven't heard anybody say anything bad about the kid beyond the fact that, like, he might be a little bit naive, right? He loves basketball. He is absolutely a grinder. I don't know if he necessarily has the highest basketball IQ, but it's not because he doesn't play enough, right? And I think the issue is the wrong people have his ear. He has an agent that's never repped an NBA draft pick this high before, right? And he seems like he's trying to make decisions and try to steer himself to go to a certain spot when it's like, why? It almost doesn't matter where you go when you are that high of a draft pick, but get in an organization where they're gonna invest in you more than anything else. And so I don't understand the thought process here. It's a red flag to me, not because of the kid, but because of who has influence over some of the decisions that he's making and who has his ear. And if that doesn't change, I think it's a very big concern for what his ceiling could end up being as an NBA basketball player.
He's Rob Doster. You know him from the Field of 68. Always love your insight, Rob. We'll talk to you soon, man.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen. Take care.
There he is, Rob Doster.
Thanks,
hey,
Rob.
Once again, folks, if you want to check out our betting splits exclusive to VSiN Pro subscribers, well, you can check them out for as little as $9.99 for that first month. Head on over to VSiN.com/subscribe. Our info comes directly from DraftKings Sportsbook as well as Circa Sportsbook. It is VSiN Primetime.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Putting a bow on the show, it is VSiN Primetime here on this lovely Tuesday evening. That's Will Hill. I'm Tim Murray. Thanks to all the guests that joined the program here tonight. A lot of NBA draft chatter, updated odds courtesy of Jeff Sherman on the NBA betting market. And Man, a lot to get to, Will, as we put a bow on the show. Handful of games still going on. The Dodgers up 8-3 right now in the Colorado Rockies as we continue to kick ourselves for that. What the heck is wrong with Justin Verlander? Giving up three runs here to the Miami Marlins, and the Giants trail 3-0 in the top of the fourth inning. Verlander giving up three runs on five hits so far against the Marlins here tonight.
I can answer that question. He went to college about the same time I went to college. He's old. He's in his like 40s now. So I think that has something to do with it.
Man's old. Yeah. All right. Our VSiN primetime game of the night has concluded as the Cincinnati Reds walk it off. They beat the New York Yankees here tonight. The final score 5-4 in 11 innings. So the Reds score two runs in that bottom of the 11th inning. I got a text from our boss, Bill Ady, saying, wait, did the odds for Burns change middle of the game? I'm like, yeah, they did. So why don't you remind folks of where this market was over the weekend as Chase Burns made his first career start tonight in Cincinnati?
Yeah, so Saturday night, I'm on the East Coast, maybe 11 o'clock midnight around that time. I can go find the time of the tweet. It's announced that Burns is coming up, number two pick in the draft just last year. He's going to face the Yankees on Tuesday. And I just think, like, I'm sure you think a lot of times when you see this stuff, all right, how's this actionable? What's the bet? Sometimes these books, especially it's late at night, these books aren't paying attention. You can maybe sneak in a nice number. So there's 100-1 at DraftKings, NL Rookie of the Year. Maybe an hour or two later before I went to bed, so it's all the way down to 60. I said, man, that's a good number. Woke up 8 o'clock in the morning or so, looked down to 20-1. Didn't monitor it from then until now, until he pitched a couple of really impressive innings to start. The final line, not going to be as impressive as the stuff was. As he struck out, the first five guys, six Ks in the first two innings. And he got down to as low as plus 300 in the middle of the game. And now he sits at FanDuel plus 340 or so. So 100-1 Saturday night, plus 300, plus 340 here on a Tuesday night with, I mean, he pitched well. He was impressive. What, just a couple of really good innings of baseball. So to say these markets are volatile is an understatement. If these markets are going to move this much and overreact that much, you know, right or wrong, there's going to be some bets to be made because those are just some wild, wild swings. And it's not based on performance. I mean, he just threw a couple of good innings. Five innings, three runs. He goes from 100-1 to 3-1. So things are crazy in terms of the odd movement.
Yeah, big movement there in that NL Rookie of the Year market. And here's the thing. I'd be curious to see how it shifts tomorrow because Mizorowski is going to start for the Brewers against Paul Skeens. That should be quite the game. I want to pull up those odds. Before we put a bow on tonight, I do want to take a look at tomorrow and the board because that is the day game. I'm sure many people are going to be fascinated to see Paul Skeens against Jacob Mizorowski. And right now, the betting market has Pittsburgh at around a minus 117 favorite total, either 6.5 or a juice 7 out there in the market. First five is not up yet. Will, anything that you're going to look to potentially bet in that Skeens-Mizorowski showdown in Milwaukee?
How juiced are the sevens? The seven sounds pretty good. I generally don't like playing full game unders because of the bullpens, especially sitting on a seven. If it's 3-3, the best you're going to do is push. But seven between those two guys, that seems like a lot.
Seven is the one shop I'm seeing here in town. There's an offshore as well. Looks like minus 20 or minus 30 is the juice on the sevens.
That's not bad. That would be a play for me. I'm looking at DraftKings too. You can already bet the first inning. Brewers, over under hits, so Brewers to not get a hit in the first inning against Skeens. Under hits, so no hits, plus 130. That's you can put me down for a bet there. Under half a hit in the first inning against Skeens. I'll take the plus 130 that Skeens can have a clean 1-2-3 first. And again, you can win on a walk, error, hit by pitch. As long as they don't get a hit, you win. I like that plus 130. I don't think that'll be there in the morning. I think that's a touch high.
The how about the under? How about the Nerfy right now? Minus 160.
That's probably justified. Again, that's getting expensive, but that's probably justified. I thought you were going to say higher. I thought you might get close to $2. I'd like to see a little more from Mizorowski. It's been an impressive two starts here. I'm not ready to anoint him yet. I mean, he's been about as impressive as you could be, but For him to be minus 160 already for Nerfy, I don't know. It's justified. He's been impressive. I take it back. It's justified. Do you play those a lot, the Yerfy Nerfies?
I don't, unless someone with red hair tells me to play it, and I'll do it. And like last night, we had an easy winner there. So I can't wait to watch that one tomorrow, though. Nice little day game, afternoon baseball in Milwaukee. I believe Eastern time, that will be a 2 o'clock first pitch, I want to say,
two Eastern. Yep.
Two Eastern, 11 my time, Pittsburgh and Milwaukee. Also on the Hill tomorrow night is Mackenzie Gore tomorrow afternoon for the Washington Nationals, who may or may not be going for a sweep of the San Diego Padres come tomorrow. Right now, the Nationals are up 3-0 on the San Diego Padres, as that one is in the fourth inning there. Right now, the Nats minus 194 and the Padres are plus 147. However, worth noting here, Padres at plus 142, they've got men on second and third. Might not be the worst thing to take a look at the Padres here to come back and win this game.
Yeah, as you know very well, that Nationals bullpen is awful. So
terrible.
I'd agree. That's one. It's not as good as Dodgers Rockies, which, again, that was all time missed opportunity. I can't believe we blew that one. But no, the Nats bullpen's bad. That's not a bad price there. But the Nats have been a feisty underdog really for a couple of years now. I know they had the stretch where they lost to the Rockies, and you know, anytime you see the Nationals as a 2-1 favorite, you're like, man, I don't know if that's justified. But you know, they played well against the Dodgers just in past years. I know they've been one of the sneaky, good ROI teams just because they get big prices and they win more than you'd think. They've been plucky. Plucky, I think, is a fair word for your Nationals team, just like you, plucky.
Just took a look at the betting market to see what was moving, and more movement on Jeremiah Fears to be a top five pick. We heard from Rob Doster, plus 250 was one that he liked, and now plus 175 is the movement here. So that is where we sit with that one. So movement on Jeremiah Fears, as there was another mock draft. Jonathan Givony came out and had him at +2, had him in the top five. That's now plus 175. So movement in that market, as we see Jeremiah Fears getting a little bit of love to go in the top five there. Always look around. I'm just going to pull up real quickly before we hit a break and hand it off to Hoops Peterson. FanDuel, curious what they have Jeremiah Fears at too. That seems to be the move here this evening, is Jeremiah Fears to be a top five pick. And taking a look right now, to be number five pick, Fears is plus 175. To be a top five pick, it is plus 170. So once again, the landing spot seems it's number five or not. So that is where we sit right now. The Padres.
Let me ask you, do you think we get a curveball tomorrow? Do you think this is pretty straightforward? And let's just talk it through. Flag. I mean, we don't have to mention it, but we'll do it anyway. Flag, Harper. You think Edgecombe 3? Or not necessarily?
I think we do get a curveball. I don't know if
at
it's
3.
I think Brooklyn's going to be aggressive. They've got five first round picks. They're sitting at 8. And the reporting that is out there is that Ace Bailey is on their radar. Could they move up to 5? Could they move up to 4? I do
that
wonder.
That would scare me. I'm gonna trade all that stuff for Ace Bailey.
Well, maybe not all of it.
I know it's in football. You want to keep as many picks as possible because you're just as likely almost, you know, seventh round, first round. It doesn't matter. Not that it doesn't matter, but the later picks are more valuable. Not necessarily in the NBA, but I don't know. That would just make me nervous, Bailey, giving up all that stuff for him.
I'm going to go ahead and take Jeremiah Fears to go top five. There's a lot of movement here, but I will be in on that. You want to give a best bet out before I do the read to close out the show?
That under 7 Brewers Pirates, even though it's juiced at minus 120, that looks good. Under Pirates, or under Brewers hits in the first inning, plus 130. Those sound good to me. And That Trey Johnson, you said, was plus 475, eighth overall. I'll trust Gavoni. I'll take a shot at the plus 475.
All right. Our best bets, as always, brought to you by G-Bank, introducing the $500 trifecta from G-Bank. First Bet and VSiN. In your first 90 days, deposit and play through $1,000 at First Bet to trigger a $500 trifecta. You'll receive $200 in cashback rewards on your G-Bank Visa Signature credit card. First Bet will give you a $100 deposit match, and we here at VSiN will give you a free VSiN Pro subscription through October 31st. VSiN.com/GBank. For Will Hill, I'm Tim Murray. This has been VSiN Primetime.